I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm Jason Lee along with Amy Donaldson, and you're listening to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Today we're joined by Warren Van Schalkwyk. He is the co-founder of the Utah Boys Volleyball Association, and this weekend he is putting on a tournament that involves almost 700 young people playing volleyball in relatively close quarters, but he's doing so in a way that is presented with challenges from the COVID environment that we live in, however, trying to do so in a way that's going to help these young people participate in sports, help their families get out and be able to support their children, and also provide an example of how you can do these kinds of events in a way that hopefully is safe and fun for everybody. But before we get going, Warren, I was hoping you could kind of give us a little on your background, who you are, and how you got to start hosting volleyball tournaments.
Well, sure, and I really appreciate the chance to be on a show with you guys. Yeah, so my story is I was a 20-year-old kid, grew up in Johannesburg, South Africa, fell in love with the sport of volleyball when I turned 16, and by the age of 20, I decided to risk it all and come to America to see if I could secure a volleyball scholarship, and I actually pulled it off. So I got a scholarship at BYU, played on the men's volleyball team, and fell in love with the people, fell in love with the state, fell in love with the country, and decided to make my living and my life here in Utah. So I've just been active in the Utah volleyball scene ever since. That was 30-something years ago, and I'm still here.
Well, and talk to us, though, about making volleyball your living, because you didn't always work in the volleyball universe, right?
No, that's right. I've had multiple careers. I was actually in the mortgage and real estate industry prior to this. And the money was good, but the lifestyle was horrible. So in 2008, 2009, when the crisis hit, I kind of saw it as an opportunity for me to get out of something I didn't love anyway and to maybe try and follow my passion. And my passion has always been not only playing the game, but also teaching the game to the next generation. Youth sports in general has been so good to me. It was my ticket to come to America. I've seen it affect so many people's lives for the positive. And so I decided I was going to get into organizing, growing the game of volleyball here in the state of Utah. So I run a club called Club GSL Volleyball. We're a huge volleyball club in Salt Lake County with about 800 athletes that participate in year-round different events. And
volleyball is that big, huh?
It's that big. It's the biggest high school sport amongst girls in the country, and people don't know that. I tell people all the time, it's the biggest sport no one's heard of. So
until the Olympics, right?
Yeah. Well, beach volleyball has put us on the map. So yeah, we've got the girls to thank for that. But and then about 7 years ago, we formed the Utah Boys Volleyball Association just to see if we could organize and create some interest in boys volleyball. And to be honest with you, sitting here today, there are 7 different states, over 3 facilities, all here in Utah, with almost 700 boys competing in what I would say is a milestone for Utah volleyball and for me personally, to just have been working at something so hard and to see the community take to it like they have has been incredible.
How have you dealing with, as you know, we're kind of in this COVID environment. I mean, was it difficult to get this event arranged? Did you have kind of pushback or some trepidation from parents wanting to bring their kids out?
Not at all. So we organize these events sometimes a year in advance. So this thing was planned a long time ago. There's a lot of work that goes into it. Just, getting the word out, and the fact that other states have found out about us is incredible. As far as the parents go, zero pushback. It's been a very big surprise to me because obviously I am terrified to be operating a youth sports event in this environment. I'm first to tell everybody I'm scared. I'm nervous. I barely slept last night. I think we're doing the right thing. If I didn't, we wouldn't be doing it. But of course, I have a lot of trepidation around it. But the support from the community and most especially the athletes and the parents has been overwhelming. So the fact that we said, hey, we're going to do something, and we had 700 people sign up and say we want to do it, knowing the risks, has been incredible.
And it's not just the risk. There's actually a bunch of precautions you're taking.
And yes, correct.
There are somewhat precautions that people are not, maybe they don't do in their regular lives, right? But they're willing to do them in order for their kids to be playing volleyball this weekend.
Uh-huh. 100%. So we are under very strict orders from the health department to, you know, we have to do things like we're walking around the gym right now yelling at people for not wearing masks. And if you knew me at all, that is not our personality. We don't want to be those guys, but in order to make this event happen, we're willing to be those guys. They're severely limiting how many people can come through the front door. When you're done playing, you and your teammates have to leave the building. We encourage social distancing. We're sanitizing the volleyballs. And so, you know, we're doing everything to help. We work closely with the health department, both myself as the event director and the facility owner. We're both very concerned, and we want to make sure we put on the best possible event while at the same time being as safe as possible.
When you mentioned the health department, I wanted to ask you, so do you confer with them when you say to them, look, I want to put this event on, there's going to be hundreds of young people and their parents, do you have advice for me as to how I can do it in the most safe fashion?
Yes. And I think one of the surprises to me has been that the advice isn't that different from what you would hear, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, social distancing, please wear a mask, wash your hands, and if you have any symptoms, don't come through the front door. There hasn't been more than that. Had there been, we would have been happy to jump through those hoops. But other than that, we've not. They're not asking us to do anything more, you know. So,
did they try to deter you at all?
No, not at all. No, thank heavens, no.
So take us through, though, you know, the spring, and we only have a couple of minutes in this segment, but, you know, from the beginning of COVID, when things were shut down completely, and how you get to it, what is, a historic tournament for the state.
Yeah, you bet. So we got shut down like everybody else did in March, which is right during the girls' club volleyball season. And these numbers might surprise you, but we have about 6,500 girls playing club volleyball from January through April. So it's a huge number of people that are involved, tons of coaches, tons of parents, tons of kids, tons of administrators. The facility owners are grateful because they're paying their bills, their mortgages on their massive buildings. So when the news struck that COVID was hitting the whole globe, quite frankly, and we shut down in March, everything just sat dormant for, I want to say, we did not start resuming activities until May. And I can tell you, as a guy who runs youth volleyball through the course of the summer, our typical numbers are about 80 kids. And we exploded to 257 kids for our summer programming. And that told me a lot about what the parents and the kids were thinking, you know, just their willingness to go out and how important youth sports was to them, and that they were willing to come and support the programming we were running.
They were desperate to get out of the house.
I think so. I think mom was like, please, you're driving me crazy. Go play ball.
But, you know, look, and we all know that we're all a little stir crazy, right? Let's be honest. However,
right.
I think the idea that parents and their kids, yourself, who are trying to organize these events to allow them that outlet and do it in a way that's safe, as long as we're able to adhere to what we know are the ways to prevent the spread of COVID-19, then there's got to be a way that we can start to enjoy our lives as much as we can.
And it has to be. What's the alternative?
We've got to do that. That's right. Sitting at home and going stir crazy. That's what
the alternative would be. And that's because, I should mention this, this is a new virus, so we don't know much about it. We don't even know if you will actually be immune from it if you get it.
Right.
They're saying now the antibodies don't last. We are having cases of reinfection. So is it like influenza virus where you can be reinfected, or is it like smallpox where we can eventually come up with an inoculation and have a lifetime immunity? I mean, those are things we don't know. So when you say, well, we'll just stay home until we figure that out, we might be home for a couple
of
years.
Right.
Nobody
that
wants to
doesn't
be
sound like a great plan.
It does not. Today we're being joined by Warren von Skulkbeek. He is the co-founder of the Utah Boys Volleyball Association, who's putting on a youth volleyball event with almost 700 young people this weekend in a COVID environment that is very challenging, to say the least. We're going to continue our discussion with him. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today we're joined by Warren von Skolkvaik, who is the head of the Utah Boys Volleyball Association, who's putting on a multi-state tournament for volleyball in our region with almost 700 young people. And I want to ask you, first of all, before we get to the question, we want to talk about mental health as it relates to COVID-19 and being able to participate in sports. Are these boys and girls, or is it just strictly boys today?
Today's just boys.
Okay. And so...
Because that's because there's high school volleyball going on right now
that's
in Utah.
The girls' club season starts in a couple months.
What... Amy mentioned this to us when we were offline. What mental health is a part of this, too, because if you stay inside, if you're unable to participate, if you feel like you have very little to look forward to because... You have all these restrictions in your life, that it may have an impact on your psyche and just your overall quality of life. Have you found that to be an issue or a concern for the people and the young people and the parents involved in your tournament?
Yeah, I'm kind of in a unique situation because of what I'm doing for a living, right? I don't know how many other people. Happen to have the vantage point I have right now, where my job and my daily communication is with parents of these parents who want to send their kids to go play in a sport. So I talk to hundreds of parents and I meet hundreds of kids, and obviously the topic of COVID has been the number one topic, right, over the course of the last 6 months. And I think it is overwhelmingly obvious that the parents want their kids to go play sport. They want that. It's not an option. They want that to happen. Obviously, they want it to happen under the best, possible scenarios and most safest possible conditions. But there is no question that youth sports, even not in a COVID situation, is good for confidence, self-esteem, learning to interact with people, learning to listen to authority, like listening to your coach, learning how to win and learning how to lose. These are some skill sets that I think youth sports teaches our kids in a little mini ecosystem that they then get to go and duplicate in their lives, right? So it's not just about volleyball or soccer or lacrosse or basketball. It doesn't matter what the thing is. I think our kids getting out there and competing and being able to interact socially is critical to their development and their mental health. And you don't have to be a doctor to know that. I know that. You know that. A kid sitting home all day with mom and dad, that is not a good situation for an extended period of time. It's just not. So, yeah, we've been so supported by this, and I actually do see the effects. The kids walk into our gyms, and they're smiling, and they're happy, and they go home with smiles on their faces and they have something relevant that they've done that day. You know, they got their first serve in, or they got a dig, or they got their first pancake, or, it's a big deal to be able to go out and work at something and get good at something.
And Warren, let me ask you, interject and ask you, what role does competition play? Because there's a lot of people who are saying, well, kids can work out in small groups, or they can go out and do things just practice or play against their teammates. Why do we need to have a tournament of 700 kids?
Oh, my gosh, right? Listen, America is a competitive place. being a human is a competitive thing. We compete for our mate. We compete for our job. We compete for our livelihood. Learning to compete is a core principle and fundamental of who we are as a species, I think. So in large part, what we try and teach these kids is how to compete. And many times you even have to, especially young girls, you'll be surprised. Boys, not so scared of competing. They'll just throw down right away and be ready to compete. But young ladies, you know, they're so shy and they're so sweet. And it takes us a minute to coax them out of their shell, you know, these little 9, 10, 11-year-olds. And to teach them that it's okay to fight for something. I don't know if you could put enough value on that. Teaching a young lady that it's okay to fight for something and to be able to say what you want and how you want it and you're going to work hard and you have a goal and you want to get that. I don't know where you get a better experience than in youth sports to learn those skill sets. I think it's crucial and critical.
Have you had much pushback from parents on the rules you've asked of them, you know, the things you've asked them to do?
I can proudly tell you zero. I have... Look, I follow people's social media and I hear the grumblings. Yeah, you know, people are like, oh, whatever, like whatever. This, but the minute they walk through that door, if we ask them to put on a mask, they'll put on a mask. We do have to go around and remind people. I feel like people who aren't wearing their masks are not doing it because they're just like, yeah, I'm an American. Don't bug me. No, they're just like, oh, my gosh, it's in my pocket or, you know, oh, it's still around my chin or whatever, you know, so. No, I think people are very supportive. People are not dumb. People know exactly what's happening out there. They understand the numbers. You know, again, the clientele, the parents of the kids who send their kids to youth sport are typically educated, smart, financially stable. These are people who can understand data and read data for themselves. And I, you know they're not sending their kids into a dangerous environment. You know that. And so we have I can't even thank the community enough for their support because that's the reason I keep going. If I was getting pushback from parents, I would shut everything down. But the parents are the ones who are actually driving this because they recognize the importance of youth sports in their kids' lives.
You said you conferred with the State Health Department before you started, you know, putting the tournament together. What were the kinds of things they spoke to you about and were they reluctant to have you put this kind of event on?
Not at all. Next week is going to be an interesting conversation based on the spikes. You know, I mean, you know, clearly they're worried. We appreciate their concern. We talk to them. We don't want to get shut down. You know, the parents don't want us to get shut down. So, but it has been interesting because I would imagine with the millions, maybe slash billions spent on research and how many countries nationwide are actively working on a cure, how little we still know. Because what they're asking us to do is not different than what they're asking you to do if you go out for dinner. They want us to social distance. They want to make sure everybody's wearing masks. They want to limit the amount of people coming into the building. They want to make sure that if anybody has any symptoms whatsoever, that they do not come into the building. And you know, obviously we sanitize the volleyballs and, you know, the kids are no longer high-fiving the other team. That's probably a big deal. Mm-hmm. Back in the day at the end of the game, you'd high-five the other team. Now they just wave at each other. But seriously, other than that, there's been no other advice given to us that we should be following.
Interesting.
Or guidelines.
Know, when you watch sports, and as I use soccer or even hockey, which is a pretty competitive sport and sometimes very violent, but at the end of every game, you know, they walk and they shake hands.
Right.
Because when it comes down to it, it's a competition. So there's part of me that feels a little bad for these young people who aren't able to, you know, shake the hand of the person who is, you know, competing so, you know, valiantly against them. But
right.
In order to be safe, that's one of the sacrifices you have to
yep.
make.
Yep,
gonna,
that's
I
a
was
going to
say, though, they could be like the kids. So they're just announcing today that Waterford School is going to cancel girls and boys basketball because it's indoors. And they don't feel like they can hold it safely. So, you know, you every institution, and I watched UHSA grapple with this, and we can talk about it in the next segment because I know we're close to the end of this one. But I did want to ask if parents are having any anxiety about not being able to watch their kids, or do they understand that's the sacrifice?
Yeah, that is a great question, and parents are really bummed. Live streaming, like Facebook Live, is very popular right now, the top one. It's very popular right now, but yeah, parents are bummed because we're only allowing 10 spectators per team. So if you got 10 kids on your team, that's only one parent, you know. Usually, in the years past, we would have mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, the
right,
three little kids, and the cousins
right.
all coming, you know. So, yeah, that's bummed people out. But, you know, Amy, to your point, it's interesting. I was talking to some people in Nevada and California, And they've opened up volleyball tournaments but shut down basketball tournaments because the reason is volleyball is not a contact sport. Basketball, on the other hand, you know, you're bumping up against people mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe sweating even on people. But in volleyball, there's a net in the way, and you're not, you know, you come here with your team and you leave with your team. You actually can stay in a group and not come into anybody else's space. So volleyball is actually unique in that sense right now.
Well, I'm grateful that they're able to do that in a way that provides, like I said, the outlet for them. And, you know, we need all the happiness we can find in this environment we have.
Oh, my gosh, right?
We're joined today by Warren von Skolkvik. He is putting on an enormous tournament this weekend with almost 700 kids in this COVID environment. We're finding out about what it takes to be able to have events and still be able to do so safely. We'll continue our discussion. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today, joined by Warren von Skolkvik, who is the co-founder of the Utah Boys Volleyball Association. And he's also the head coach for, what is it? It's Volleyball Salt Lake, GSL?
GSL.
Club great GSL. Great
Club
yeah.
GSL.
Yeah, we are the Great Salt Lake Volleyball Club, Club GSL.
And so as a tall, handsome man with an accent, I would imagine that you're able to, the moment they meet you, the parents are like, I want this guy to coach my kid. So have you talked to the parents?
Are you stalking me on Instagram? I've not even met you. How do you know?
It's not true.
How do you know I'm tall?
So first of all, you're a volleyball player, and unless you guys cry, you're probably
way to go. Yeah, but, yes. That's fair.
But I have gone to the BYU website and I've looked for your thing. So
okay.
I want to ask you though, have you had time to maybe talk and confer with parents about some of the things they'd like to, you know, the precautions you're taking in trying to prevent transmission and those kinds of things?
Absolutely. And parents, to be honest with you, my whole world is parents. Parents are my client. They're the ones paying to bring their kids to the program that we run. So I absolutely am listening and trying to keep the pulse of what the parents are thinking and doing and how they're reacting to everything. And I feel like in large part what we do is driven by the parents and them wanting what the product that we're putting out. I continue to share a variation of the same language of the same email and have been sending out the same email for the last 3 or 4 months. And it basically says, look, there's a chance that your kid might be exposed to somebody who's either has or may have had COVID in our gym. There's a lot of people in here. There's a good chance you're going to bump up against somebody that maybe has it. If you know that and you understand the risks associated with that, I defer to you as the parent to make the choice as to what to do with that information. If you want to bring your kid, we'll be here. If you don't want to bring your kid, we completely understand. And if none of you want to bring your kid, we'll shut down. Like, we get it. And I can't even begin to tell you how, ironically, COVID has been good for our business. It's been good for youth sports business because the parents overwhelmingly support what we're doing and intrinsically understand the value of allowing the kids to do something social, especially sports. So yeah, we listen to the parents very carefully.
And let me just say that I think it's important to talk about the realities of transmission and with the caveat that this is a new virus. So everything we know, we've learned in the last basically 8 or 9 months. And it doesn't mean that everybody isn't trying to learn constantly, but so what we learn is evolving. But most transmission occurs between people you know. So it's you're getting together with friends and family. You're engaging in some kind of social activity that it's not sitting at a desk in a school with a mask on. Mask transmission when both parties are wearing masks or when everyone's wearing a mask are actually significantly low. So, but 70% of outbreak or of infections can be traced to contact that the person had, a family party, you know, going with their family on a vacation, those kinds of things. But I think it's also just important to look at every principal and athlete. I listen to the Utah High School Activities Association sort of grapple with whether or not they should have high school sports this fall. And it's important to note that the states around us did not open up sports. California, Nevada, Colorado all decided, and I believe Oregon, all decided not to allow fall sports in their states. And Utah went ahead with it, and they actually made this decision in July, which was the last time we had a spike. And they made the decision, and they said, and I saw them all sort of, you know, trying to become scientists and read scientific studies, and like we're all doing now, but also trying to balance what they see in their kids, right? The reason we have high school sports, and study after study has confirmed this, is that getting kids involved in a team or individual sport, it gives them confidence. It reduces suicide. There's a whole host of positives. And then the flip side of that is, are we exposing teachers or elderly parents or elderly grandparents or some other people in the community to COVID because we want our kids to be playing sports? Because like every principal, I thought it was really profound. This one principal said, let's play because we don't know when we're going to get shut down. And that we shut down in the spring, everyone did, because the government asked us to. Mm-hmm. And it was devastating to kids.
Right.
Some kids didn't earn scholarships. Some kids spiraled into, they had, I don't remember, but I think it was 20% of the kids never even logged on and finished school. Like they had to go out
right.
and physically find them and figure out how to help them get credits. They decided not to fail people because of the difficulty of switching to online school. It was just a devastating recognition, I think, of how complicated, you know, things are. And it's not easy to decide. So there's all these principals and athletic directors and people like Warren and club coaches. I see coaches all the time grappling with, am I making the situation worse or am I giving kids and their parents and a community a little smidge of joy and outlet in this? But, you know, the NFL has done studies on their outbreaks. They're not, the significant spreader is not the game. It is not the workouts. It is team players eating together. You know, there's a study the CDC did saying 70% of people who had COVID in this study, I think it was like only 154 people, but they had been to a restaurant in the last 2 weeks. So they're learning more about the kinds of contacts that are spreading it. And most people are still saying schools are not a significant spreader. But in Utah, we have a pretty low threshold. It's 15 cases or 1%. And they're shutting the schools down or going online, doing a hybrid. I also have heard parents saying, what's the downside of quarantining kids every other week because their friend that they sat next to in math tested positive, right? So there are all these complicated, you know. But I'm sure, Warren, you have some, you said you didn't sleep last night, but some fear. I mean, it's an amazing thing what you have built. You're seeing your dream come to fruition, right? The largest men's volleyball tournament the state has ever hosted. And on the same day, we have a record number of COVID cases.
I know, right? It's like winning and there's an asterisk next to your name, right? It just doesn't. But let me tell you, I don't know how much time we have left.
Got about a minute.
The data that I've read and that the parents communicate to me tells us that parents are not concerned about their kids even being exposed to it. And even if they get it, they're not that worried about it. They are concerned about when the kid goes home, who they need to hang out with after that, because there's a good chance the kids are carrying it around with them. But parents overwhelmingly feel confident sending their kids here, and that's why we continue to run it. Yes, I am scared. I'm terrified. I know some people think this is a bad move. I get it. I promise. But after everything's considered, we're here, and there's 700 people who think this is a good idea. So 700 kids and their parents and their coaches. So we're grateful for it.
And there's some part of me that is grateful that you're able to do this, because I know – that if, as a young person, you always feel like every time you don't get to do something, it's like the end of the world, which obviously we know is not true as you grow older.
Except in this case, right?
It does have, it has to have an uplifting impact on you to be able to have this sense of normalcy, to do what you love doing, and have your family around to support you and be able to support other kids in what otherwise would be a pretty challenging time just to be alive. So I commend you for being able to put this together in a way that helps those kids realize those aspirations and those dreams.
Thank you.
We're going to continue our discussion,
Jason,
with Warren von Schalkwyk, talking about how to live in a COVID environment and still put on large-scale sporting events. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Hello and welcome back to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today we're speaking with Warren von Skulpbeck, who is the co-founder of the Utah Boys Volleyball Association, and he's also a coach, and he's got a tournament going on this weekend with almost 700 kids, 690 kids, and parents, and this is a COVID environment, so doing so takes some a whole lot of planning, a little bit of courage, and just the notion of giving people an opportunity to have what is otherwise some normalcy in what has been the least normal year, 2020. Yeah. I can't wait till it's gone. I mean, it has been quite the nutty time. But, Amy mentioned that there's been this kind of debate about should we be having these kinds of youth sports and other kinds of events when, in some cases, we have medical professionals who feel as though we can't even do some of the surgeries that we like to do because of the risk posed by contamination and possible transmission.
Well, not just that. Like, the hospitals are so full right now. University of Utah is at 99% capacity in their ICU beds. And then the statewide is 73%. And so they're canceling things like cancer treatments and screenings and things that I feel like are pretty vital services, right? And some of the criticism is, why are we still having high school? Because high school football playoffs are tonight, and we've had cross-country championships as well as girls soccer tournaments as well, and in the high school universe. And one of the things someone pointed out was, why are we having youth sports? And I mean, I'll let Warren respond to it first, and then I have my own thoughts on it. What are your thoughts about that kind of a criticism or parallel?
Well, first of all, let me just say, the healthcare workers are the heroes right now, and to be in any kind of leadership position, I bet I have a small fraction of the anxiety that maybe the doctors are feeling and the nurses are feeling, and maybe the leadership, the people in government who are the health department, for example, the governor, the leadership, the people who are having to make these decisions must. I don't know how they're sleeping at all. So I completely understand. I completely understand the other side of this debate. I get it. I really do. But at the end of the day, the parent is an informed consumer. They're not these idiots who are out there signing contracts they don't understand. No one's trying to pull the wool over their eyes. It's not like they think they're the only kid in the gym. You know, they understand that sport involves maybe you're going to break the six foot thing, you know, periodically during a game of volleyball, for example. So these parents are not idiots, and the parents are choosing in massive numbers to support their kids' abilities to go out and play youth sports. And so I feel like I defer to the parent. Who is smarter about a kid's health than the parent of that kid, right? So I defer to that. I in no way, shape, or form can be like, look, I think your kids are in danger. We're shutting this down.
No. Speaking of studies, there was a study released just this week that 80% of teens have reported some kind of distress, mental health issue since COVID shutdowns and precautions have begun. So the reality is that kids are really, they're suffering in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And so we have to sort of pick, at times, we have to make the best decision of risky decisions, which is life, right? Stepping outside on the porch, there are risks involved. But I would say this, the criticism that we're canceling surgeries, why are we having youth sports, is to me the very definition of a false equivalency. Now, I understand that people are going to say this is going to spread, people are going to get it, so and it brings it to our community, takes it back to somebody else's community. But they have shown repeatedly through contact tracing that these are not super spreader events. That if precautions are taken and people abide by them and they don't go and socialize outside of your tournament or their team event, you know, where the team is staying, if they follow the rules and they restrict themselves somewhat, which I talked to some of your coaches and they said the kids have learned to make sacrifices socially because they want to play sports. So they're not going out with their friends and they're not doing the things they would normally do because they want to be healthy, and they don't want, their team has been shut down a couple of times, so they don't want to shut it down. They want to play in a tournament. So to me, saying it's the hospital's decision who they take and who they're treating, and how they prioritize those other tests, you know, the cancer screenings and stuff like that. I think there are ways for them to do those safely and not cancel those. I understand they only have so many personnel, and that the real issue is we have fewer trauma units today than we did at the beginning of this outbreak, because people are just exhausted from 7 months of dealing with this.
Well, and we have overwhelming data that says that the kids are not being affected by this. So the parents know that. Mm-hmm. The one thing we know about this virus, unlike any other virus we've ever faced, is that it actually has a demographic that it's dangerous to, mm-hmm. and a demographic that it's not dangerous to. In by that standard, the flu is I'm not going to say more dangerous, because that's way too controversial. But it's
oversimplification of it. But it is.
Yes.
It doesn't have that same. So if you can protect vulnerable populations, which has always been our goal, right?
Yes.
Then kids can do these kinds of things, right?
And we know who that population is. We know who's vulnerable.
Absolutely.
So if I've got grandma, if I send my kid to a tournament, I'm probably not going to let my kid hang out with grandma.
Yes.
Until I make sure he's feeling good. You know. So there are some control mechanisms, and again, leadership. I think leadership. Thank heavens for Utah leadership at this point, because they've still given the population and the parents the choice.
Yeah, and
unlike other states.
One other thing, Warren, and before we run out of time, I wanted to hit was the economics of this, because one thing that I think is really hard for me. I mean, I just read about a restaurant study that 40% of independently owned restaurants are going to go out of business. They won't make it, right?
Yep.
And that breaks my heart. Yep. I don't want to spend my time eating
it does.
All the time. So you're a small business owner. What's this been like for you? And you know, are you going to survive it? Events have been really hard hit.
Very much so. You know, so we are a small business. We employ 45 coaches. 20 of those coaches are year-round. At this tournament, for example, we've got 17 courts running, which means we've got 17 officiators working all of tonight and all day tomorrow. Every single team has a coach. So you've got 69 coaches, and typically there's an assistant coach. So even in the small little world that we have, and then of course you've got the cleaning crew and the guy who owns the building and the people, you know, registering people at the door. Even in my small little ecosystem, it's a massive financial benefit to run events like this. And if we get shut down, there's a lot of people that just maybe don't pay rent next month, or maybe they don't eat, or, you know, there is a financial consequence to this that sometimes, you know, in light of all the terrifying information out there, the other side of that factor is we have to keep going, because we don't have massive savings accounts. We have to keep working. No one's given us a check if we don't work. So I don't know if people talk about that side of the equation enough, and I'm a huge advocate. I have to work, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to do so.
Listen, I want to say thank you to Warren von Skolkovic. For the first time, I
know you are doing so good.
So, but Warren,
you could just say Warren.
I'm just going to say Coach. Thanks,
Warren
Coach.
Had his name
Coach.
For many years.
Coach V.
Here. Yes, Coach. Well, I'll do that. Coach V. Then, Coach Warren von Skolkovic. Thank you so much, Warren, for joining us and offering your insights and continued success to you. We want you to succeed, not just because you've been a guest on our show, but because you're doing the kind of work and the kind of thing that can help kids be better in their lives for the rest of their lives. And thank you very much for that. Join us again for the next episode.
Thank you.
Of
thank
the
you for
Project,
the invite.
Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at boramed@gmail.com or at borjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at ADonSports and at JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is at VOR Podcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast and all the places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We'd love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee along with Amy Donaldson. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.